We're now thinking of Sukkot, and many people spend lots and lots of time, quite rightly so, on buying their Arba Minim, choosing an Eshuv, getting a Lulav, finding nice Hadassim. And in the words of Poskim, Arava is Motsoi, it's commonly found. We don't always necessarily pay so much attention to the Arava. However, it's not as simple as it sounds. In fact, the Kuzari Sheni says that one of the most amazing things we notice about Teres Shebal Peh is that everybody in the world agrees what an Esrig is. It says in the Torah Pre-Eitz Hodah, everybody agrees what an Esrig is. Everyone agrees what a Lulav is. Everyone agrees what a Hadass is. What is the situation with Arava? And it occurred to me already quite a while ago that as every plant flower has some Latin name, let's try and establish what is the modern Latin name, if I may use such a word, of the Arava. Simple question. So I thought, well, I'll write to Kew Gardens and ask them what the Arava is, and I'll give them the criteria that the Rambam gives. There are also one of the two additional criteria in Chazal, in Medrash, and in Zohar. And these criteria are as follows. And we'll go through the actual Gemara in a moment. The Gemara talks about the Arava having a red stalk, having a long leaf, not a round leaf. Arvei nochal, Arava moshuch kanochal, says the Gemara. And it should have a smooth edge around the leaf, not jagged edges. Those are the three criteria in the Gemara. The Torah's description, Arvei Nochal, shows that this Arava typically grows next to streams and rivers, although halacha is generally that you do not have to take the Arava that grew by streams or rivers. Your back garden may be good enough. We also know from Chazal and from Zohar that the Arava is compared to the lips of the mouth. Because we're doing teshuvah, says Rabbeinu Bechaye, with the various Arba Minim, because of those parts of the body with which we sinned. So the lulav is the spine helps you walk. The esrog is the heart, the hadas are the eyes, and the arava is the mouth. Like we say in the Torah, lo sasur acharei levavachem v'acharei einechem. So the parts of your body which were sinning, we're doing teshuvah with on Sukkos by using the Arba Minim. And the mouth, the lips, symbolizes things like Lashon Hara, which we may not do, and that is the Arava. So I wrote these criteria to Kew Gardens, and the answer which I got back, you have in front of you, we won't go through it in detail, but Mrs. Bromley, the highest scientific officer, says that there is no simple answer to the question, because there are up to 500 kinds of willow in the world, assuming that Arava means willow. And she also writes that the species also hybridize very easily. Hybrid means to graft together two species. We hear so much about the Esrog mustn't be grafted, and the Hechsherim that it's not Murkav, but what's the situation with Arava? We never see any Aravas on sale, Eino Murkav, but the Sefer Kashrus Arba Minim brings down from the Chayodom and other Poskim that just like Murkav is a Pasul by Esrog, so also Murkav is a Pasul by all the Arba Minim. So if you have a grafted Arava, then it must be possible. On the other hand, do we mean when we say grafted that it's grafted with some other totally different species? Or do we mean maybe if it's grafting two different kinds of Arava together? One which is okay and one not okay, and let's see what the result is. We're not told that. But we'll be able to get a view on this once we've been through various criteria. Interestingly, you will see that the willow is called Salix in Latin. And salix means water. Arvei nochal are typically those willows which grow next to water. The first species which Mrs. Bromley talks about is Salix babylonica. Salix babylonica is the weeping willow. And some botanists mistakenly assumed that this was the species which the Israelites hung their harps on Ala Rovim Besocho in Al Naros Bovel, crying because of the temple's destruction, and so he called this Salix babylonica. But Salix babylonica originally comes from China, and it's hard to conceive that a species which the Torah is talking about is something which comes from China and was never in the Middle East. It's not a very big picture here, but I've got the typical weeping willow here, and
If you want the fresh thing, is maybe Thank you. Right, if you can't see, I could pass around a blackberry which has something to see by.
I'm not worried about willows, not blackberries.
Sorry, I thought I had some weeping willows here to show you, but the weeping willow has largish leaves. The weeping willow has largish. Oh, here we are. These are from a weeping willow. They've got largish leaves, but you've got the idea of the shape of the mouth. But you'll see that they have some slightly jagged edges. So if you'd like to pass those round, there is no red stalk whatsoever found on the weeping willow. Here's another one. No, when I say round, it means the edge of the leaf is round. That you should not have on an iroba. Yeah, but what we'll do is we'll just refer briefly to one or two of the other species. That's the weeping willow. There is a very common willow in England called the white willow or Salix alba, and that is usually with a very silvery kind of appearance, and it's also of a weeping type. That is a Salix alba white willow, and that is similar to the leaves you have here. In fact, many of the weeping willows we see in England are a hybrid between the white willow and the Babylonica, the real weeping willow. And they're very common. Arei nochal, they're commonly found by streams and rivers, but they do not have a red stem. It's clear from the Beis Yosef, and modern botanists confirm this, that when the correct kind of willow is in the sun, then the stem turns red. So then, even if the stem is not red, but could become red if the sun shines on it, then that is a kosher aroma. And there's another kind of white willow. You get the silvery appearance, which is not typical of what is a kosher aroma. And then you have, I have here some leaves which are typical of, well, you've got the real ones being passed around. Those are the typical leaves of the weeping willow. So a number of species are mentioned here. Salix alba is well known for cricketers because cricket bats are made from the wood of the bark. And Salix fraginis is called the crack willow and certain mixtures. And interestingly, this letter refers to such words as safsafa and araba, and we'll come to that in the Gemara. So if we now go straight on to the second page of your handout, we will look at the Gemara in Sukkot Daf Lamed Dalet Omud Aleph, where you see a vertical line, Tanu Rabbanon. She didn't send the Gemara, but I can show you the articles if you like. There are certain books about plants in the Bible where various theories are made, and there have been a number of studies done as to what is a kosher aroba since I wrote that letter quite a long time ago. But if we read the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanon, Eizo Arava, what is an Arava? Leizo Tzaftafa, and what is Tzaftafa? Because we learn that Tzaftafa is not kosher. So the Gemara says, Arava Kono Shelo Edom, its stem is red, the Ono Shelo Moshuch, and its leaf is elongated, because it's Moshuch Kenochal, we say, Ufio Cholak, and its leaves have a smooth edge, not jagged. Safsafa, in contrast, Konoshala Lovon, it has a white stalk, the Oloshala Ogle, and it has a rounded leaf, Upio Domela Megel, and its leaves are compared to a Megel. Megel is literally a scythe, something with slightly jagged edges, or what you might see like serrated edges on a knife. And then the Gemara asks, Vahot Tanya, but didn't we learn somewhere else in a Braisa, Domela Megel Kosher, if the Arova is compared to the Megel, that it's okay, that it has slightly jagged edges. Domela Meser Apostle, but a Meser is a saw. A saw has very large teeth. Apostle, I'm now saying things according to the Rambam. Omra Abaya, Kitanya Hi, Vachil Fogilo. Ah, well, we're talking about when you've got very slight jagged edges like the Megel, that's a chilfogilo, and a chilfogilo is kosher. And you'll see the little letter of the Rambam next to that, the Chilfa Gila, which shows that that's brought down to Halacha. That Chilfa Gila is kosher. That even if you have some small jagged edges, but we will look at Rashi in a moment, providing you have the other criteria, then it's kosher. But the question we're going to ask is, do you need all three criteria, or is one of these criteria good enough? Is it and, or is it or? Or is it and stroke or? So, if we look down in Rashi on the very first wide line, towards the bottom of the page, Lemegel, the Altaina Doma Lemegel Kosha, he says, Megel Kotsir Pegimosel Kulon Notos the Tadechod. The serrated edges all point slanting into one direction, Akuros Klape Beis Yadshela, towards its handle, so to speak. So his interpretation of Megel is not just small serrated edges, which is what the Rambam says. The Rambam says small serrated edges for Megel, and Meser is large serrated edges. Meser he Megira Shekarin Shigo in his language, and its bits of serrated edges are jutting out in different directions, not just pointing in one direction. So Kabimo sucking then like a knife, where it might be jagged in a more 90 degree manner and not in a pointed manner. There are illustrations, in fact, in this sefer of Kashas Abor Minim, where you can see a kind of serrated edge where there's small pointing in one direction, which is okay according to Rashi, Chilfa Gila. But when you've got rough serrated edges which are not pointing in a particular direction, that is called Doma Lemesa, which is possible according to Rashi. Rambam's distinction is small or big. So that might bring us nearer to understanding what is a kosher arava. If we come back to the letter of Mrs. Bromley, she doesn't give anything definitive in her letter. She even suggests in her letter that the arava might be some kind of poplar tree. She says, if we look at the third, fourth paragraph, Salix alba occurring naturally in this area can have Salix alba minute serrate margins, that is Lemegel according to Rambam, and has brownish twigs. Well, usually they're whitish. Salix babylonica certainly has serrate leaves, but can have reddish twigs. I've never seen a red twig on a weeping willow. Salix acmophila and Salix serrata also grow near eastern streams, alongside other trees. Also are fortunately called willows, she said. But the conclusion I'm drawing today is that what seems to be the most kosher arava, and you do have them on display downstairs, I'm not advertising, those people are selling, but I cut this in my garden this morning, deliberately a small one, because I want to keep the long ones for Yom Tov. But a kosher arava should be at least 3 tefachim, which is about 12 inches, which is about 30 centimetres, so this isn't quite okay, but this has straight edges. There is a reddish stalk here, but you'll see it's green on the other side. So as a large illustration I've got here, I can show you yes, the Beis Yosef says it's all to do with the sun. So this is, if you can see it, this is the most important picture of all. So if you can't see it, let me know and I can pass this round. Press the red button if it goes blank, and you, I'm not trying to show off that. But Rav Chunna Halpern, when he saw this, he said, "Oh, this is arava," and it's generally called the Shotzer arava, in Yiddish kind of language, because the Shotzer Rebbe used to use it. That's the only reason why. And in Yiddish, there are many people who refer.
That's English. It comes from the normal
screen. I've grown this here, but I don't know where it originates from. The ones you see downstairs, which look like this, come from America. But you can get them in Israel. Okay. And the slightly jagged edges in Yiddish they call zegeluch, which is something one should try to avoid. So is this kosher or isn't it kosher? That's the question. Given that the Gemara talks about chilfa gila, although you don't have here a red stem. Here you've got the red stem. Well, I hope I'll get it back in the end. Anyway, so according to Mrs. Bromley, we won't go into the willow of the exiled Israelites, but she says in the penultimate paragraph that this was not a willow at all. She thinks it was the Euphrates poplar. And then she says some authors consider that the biblical willows were most probably Nerium oleander, the oleander tree, which is not a willow at all. So I googled oleander, and it's always a bush, it's never a tree. But also something interesting about it is that it's poisonous. And it's hard to believe that the Torah was prescribed to us something to use on Sukkos, which is poisonous. In fact, I could prove it, because you can prove things from Minhagim. Somebody who wanted to get more children went to the Sadiger Rebbe, Shlita, and he told this person to get his wife to drink a concoction, a herbal tea he made from the Arava over which he made a bracha. That's a gula. I had never heard of it before, but this person took it seriously, and he basically brewed a tea out of his Arava, and his wife drank it. And she gave birth in the end, but whether it was the Arava, I don't know, but... Anyway, I found later on, I found in the Sefer Ziva Minhagim, he brings down from the Maharil from a very long time ago, that Arava is the gematria of Zera, 277, and it's the same gematria as Zera, and so it's a segula for a woman to drink a tree from the Arava. So although we can't prove halacha, when you've got a minhag which is hundreds of years old, based on brewing a tea, then it's impossible that Arava is poisonous. Actually, the bark of the white willow is also slightly poisonous. In fact, aspirin is made from it. So it's not just cricket bats which give us some benefit. Thank you. So the Gemara is talking about then smooth edges and red stalk, and that the leaves are moshav kanocha. If you look at the illustration here, I'm not sure if it's easily noticeable, you'll see at the very end of this aroma a slight tiny stalk at the top, which I can't show on here, and that's called a lavlov. And a lavlov is a hiddur. It's a wonderful hiddur to have on one's aroma, because it proves that it's not niktam, that it hasn't been cut off at the top. Because an aroma which is cut off at the top is pasul. So it's not me'ikah din that you have to have a lavlov, but if you have one, it's a hiddur.
So it's a leaf going out the top.
It's not really a leaf. It's like a very tiny stalk which projects at the top. You can see it on this screen if you want.
So what would be the continuation?
You can see it on here. Yeah. So we've heard about the Rashi and Rambam machlokes. What is the actual din? Now Rav Sternberg writes in Teshuvah Sanhogas Chelek Gimel Kuf Kezai, he says, I haven't seen a proper arava given all these descriptions with the red stalk and the long leaf. He says, I've always only seen white stalks, green stalks, I haven't seen it. And he says, all the aravas I've seen all have slightly serrated edges. He was a rav many years in South Africa, and he wrote it when he was in South Africa. He's a brother-in-law of Dayan Eretzroy. And he writes in his Teshuvahs that he feels no reason why we shouldn't be lenient on this and be able to use these very kinds of arovas. And I know from Reb Chaim Halpern that Reb Shlomo Baumgarten Zatzal, who was a rov of 69, your old shul, that he allowed people to use the weeping willow. There is another kind of species which I've seen people use over the years, which puzzles me greatly because I couldn't find out the name of it. And it's very long needle type leaves. I've seen a lot of people in Switzerland using them on their lulav. And I showed this to Reb Chaim Halpern, and he doesn't believe it's an arava at all. And he said to me, look, it's a Suffolk d'oraisa we're playing around here. It's something in our Torah to do. If you spend a huge sum of money on your esrog and your lulav and your hadas, and your arava is no good, then your whole mitzvah is worthless. So it's good to try and get the arava right. And he thinks that this, the Gemara talks about the arava being a tree, and this never grows as a tree, as far as I'm aware. I have sometimes seen it with red stems, but then extremely elongated leaves, which the botanists call needle-type leaves. And so I've got a few pictures of that, where it seems, according to Reb Chaim, it's not an arava at all. I've got more pictures of it on here, if you want to see later. So let's now ask the following question.
Now people who take this as a hiddur.
They take it as a hiddur?
Yeah.
Oh.
They don't get the ones with the serrated edges.
Well, they don't have serrated edges.
Yeah.
It's true. But it grows as a bush and not as a tree. And
also not like the lips.
And it's also not shaped like the lips. That's right. So although the Gemara doesn't give the lips criteria as one of the halachas, we have to take seriously what the Medrash says and what Zohar says to give an idea. It's not really shaped like lips. They do grow as by stream. They do require water, but But it's very clear from Paskim that if a kosher arava can grow away from the stream. They are typically found by streams, by rivers, but you don't have to. But the leaves of this kind, I have measured, I've got some actually at home of these, but the leaves of some of them measure as long as 30 centimetres, which is very long for a leaf. And it's so narrow, it's not the typical shape of a mouth, as you say. So now let's just deal briefly with this question. Do we need all these criteria, or will some of them do?
In Halacha, the fear of a tree is that the bride is going to go away after a year. It's the same thing between a fruit and a tree. In Halacha, it doesn't really make any difference, right?
I agree with you that there are some things we say Berpioites on which are not looking like trees, but we'll have to reserve that more for another time. Rav Chaim's answer to me said, if we're not sure, we base ourselves on Masorah. What's handed down to us? What our parents taught us? And in Masorah, which is very important for the oral law, if we don't have a clear Masorah for something, then we don't use it. Back to our question then about the criteria. The Oruch Lener, Rav Etlinger says, all three criteria are needed to make a kosher arava, but he includes Chilfo Gilo. Because Chilfo Gilo he regards as, although it's slightly serrated edges, because it's only so slight, then it's regarded as not serrated at all. So Chilfo Gilo, in his mind, is something which is a smooth leaf. The Bach implies, in Simon Tov Reish Mem Zayin, that only one of the criteria are needed out of those three. So it's or. But the Netziv, the Tziv says something slightly different. Ziv Rav Maftolik Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, he says, just like the Chilfo Gilo is okay with a jagged edge, but that will have then a red stalk and a long leaf, so also, he says, if you have up two which are okay elsewhere, like if you have the smooth edge and the long leaf, but you have a white stalk, then it's okay. So he seems to say two out of three. And he's saying, only if you've got all the three Tzaftafor criteria described in the Gemara, then it's possible. According to the Sfas Emes, all three criteria are needed. And he says what Abaya is doing in bringing about Chilfo Gilo, he's simply trying to argue with Gemara, but the Gemara is saying all three are needed. But then according to Abaya, if one is missing, it's okay. The Eitz HaSadeh says, you need to have a long leaf, you need to have a smooth edge, but even if a white stalk, b'shas hadachak, it's okay. And he's mashman is from Tosfos, because the wording used on Chilfo Gilo is kagon. Kagon is, for example, it's not the who Chilfo Gilo. Chilfo Gilo is just one example, and therefore there are other examples as well which may be acceptable. However, there are some who insist on all three. There's the Machzor of Vitri, who says you need all three. He says, Arava she'ema shalosha simone halalu, any Arava which does not have all these three criteria, Eino Arava, it's not Arava at all. And so says the Prima Godim, he says you need all three, and it's Mashma from the Levush as well, who says when you have all three, then it's kosher. There is even another view, which is not the view of others, from the Rivav, who says that you need all three criteria, and even Chilfo Gilo, he says, is not kosher. Even the slightly jagged edge, even though Abayah's view is that it's okay. So that leaves us in a bit of a quandary, because now you can get quite a permutation of different kinds of arava. You can get the one with all three signs we know is kosher. The one with all the three tzafsfor signs we know is posel. Chilfo Gilo we know from the Gemara and Poskim is kosher. But what about Pivka Meser? If the edges are like a saw, then even if you've got the other criteria, we know it's posel. But then what about if you have a smooth edge with a red stem but a round leaf? Is that kosher or not? Some say yes, some say no. If you have a smooth edge, long leaf and a white stalk, most say kosher. And then the seventh is if you have a jagged edge with a red stem and a round leaf, then it's definitely posel, according to the Bach. And according to the Bach, if you have a jagged edge, white stalk and long leaf, it's posel. So, without wishing to sound complicated, there you've got the criteria. We're dealing with a mitzvah d'oraisa. We want to make sure we got it right. So if you can go into a hiddur of getting all three, then you're doing very, very well. And if you do wish to have one of these growing in your garden, you can come to me after Sukkot, and I can give you a twig with roots to plant, but I should just give you one or two handy hints. Plant it far away from your house as possible. And then what you do is, if you want to do your own after Sukkot, you damage the twig, which means you scrape the bottom of it, you leave it in a vase of water. My experience is the best place is leave it through the winter in a cool place near a window, but indoors, and it will grow whitish roots. although some claim that you just stick it in the ground and it will develop its own roots. The best time to plant is after the frosty weather, which is usually Tu B'Shvat or after, but well before Pesach. And in your first year, make sure you give it 2 gallons every day. Well, it's Arvei Nochal, isn't it? And I have found that the leaves get extremely long, so long that then it gets insect bites and holes on the leaves and jagged edges as well. So what the best thing to do is to trim it Shivasa B'Tamuz. If you trim it Shivasa B'Tamuz or in that week, then you will get just the right kind of length and quality for Sukkos. When Sukkos falls late in the year, you do get insect attack, and then you might want to use a tumble bug spray, but then it won't be called organic. Anyway, I also advise you cut it right back every year, otherwise it gets huge. If we then move on now from what is Arava to some ideas about Arava, because the Arava gets, in a way, you might feel that Arava gets a raw deal, because the Esrog is called the Tzadik because it's got the fragrance and the fruit. The Hadas has the fragrance and the fruit, and the Lulav has the fruit and the fragrance, so it's talked about the people who have mitzvahs, either mitzvahs or ma'asim tovim, but not both. And Nebuch, the Arava, is compared to the Rosha, who has no mitzvahs, no ma'asim tovim, but you're not doing a mitzvah until all four are together in your hand. Because of the achdus of Klal Yisrael, we're all together, we're all responsible for each other, and so you have to take all the other minyan together, and one after another is no good. So the Arava, bad press that it gets, because it's compared to the Rosha, nevertheless, there's some very interesting things, remarkable things we can say about the Arava. We take the Arava and Hoshana Rabbah by itself, and Chazal were so particular that we take the Arava and Hoshana Rabbah that they even arranged the whole calendar to make sure that Hoshana Rabbah never falls on Shabbos. So important is this Minhag Nevi'im. It's called Minhag, a custom, Minhag Nevi'im, but they put so much emphasis on the Arava. And you might be surprised, because Shofar and Lulav, when that comes on Shabbos, Chazal cancelled it. They were worried about the carrying which might result. And there, Chazal were not worried about Shabbos. They didn't change the calendar in order to perform a mitzvah d'oraisa, but to form a minhag nevi'im of Arava, they specially change the calendar in order to make sure that Hoshana Rabbah will not fall on Shabbos. And what's very interesting about Hoshana Rabbah is that it's 21 days from Rosh Hashanah. 21 is the gematria of Ehyeh, one of Hashem's names, and Ehyeh squared is 441, which is MS. But what's also interesting is if you count from the day the world was created, because on Rosh Hashanah was already the sixth day of creation. The world was created on the 25th of Elul, so Hoshana Rabbah is the 26th day of creation. And what's happening on the 26th day? We're bringing the Arava, and 26 is the gematria of Hashem's name, Yud Kei Vav Kei, which symbolizes Hashem's midah of Rachamim. We've been through the Olim Noroim, and Hashem has been using his Midas Adin, but we want him to use his Midas Rachamim. So the Yud Kei Vav Kei, the Midas Rachamim, as opposed to Elohim and other names, falls on Hoshana Rabbah. And so when we're asking for Teshuvah Shleim on Hoshana Rabbah, we're going back to what Yom Kippur was all about, because Yom Kippur was a Chasima. We say a Gemach Chasima Tova, but then on Hoshana Rabbah we daven again for a Gemach Chasima Tova. Because there is a certain chasima about Hoshana Rabbah which you don't get on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is the 15th day of after creation. 15 is Yud Anahei. So that's part of Hashem's name, as we know from Chazal, where it says Ki Yod Al Keis Ko, when a Amalek's around at the end of Bashalach, Hashem doesn't feel so complete when a Amalek is around, so his shame is not written as Yud Kei Vav Kei. But when we come to 26th day, we've got the Yud Kei Vav Kei of Hoshana Rabbah. And we use the Arava, therefore, on Hoshana Rabbah to invoke Hashem's Midah of Rachamim. Why the Arava? Well, we spoke about the power of speech. The Arava symbolizes the mouth. And the Shem Yishmuel brings down from the Arizal that whereas Yom Kippur has an emphasis on many mitzvahs d'oraisa, especially Arroyos, we read yesterday afternoon, Yom Kippur afternoon, the parsha about Arroyos, Hoshana Rabbah is more towards Mitzvah Spein Adam Lachavero, and he says Hoshana Rabbah, the emphasis is on Lashon Hara, and that is why we are taking the Arava, which symbolizes the mouth, and we're doing Kapora for Lashon Hara, And so we can say we're doing kapara for the Bein Adam L'Mokom much more in Yom Kippur than Bein Adam L'Chavera and Hoshana Rabbah, even though they intersect with each other.
The
Shem Yishmuel brings this down from the Arizal, the Sokachova, the Avnei Nezer, otherwise known as. And so there's another interesting idea then. On Yom Kippur, we bring the Korban, we're doing a Daraisa that is instructed to us by the Torah itself, the Torah Shev Iksav. What are we doing on Hoshana Rabbah? We are symbolizing the Torah Shev Al Peh that Chazal have handed down to us by their instruction, and especially changing the calendar as well, all part of the idea of the Kochus of Chazal, which is handed to by Hashem Yisborach. So we've got the idea of the oral law, the Torah Shev Al Peh, being so symbolized on Hoshana Rabbah, when we take the Arovah. And compare that to the Shofar Lulav, which are Daraisa, which are cancelled for Shabbos, whereas the Minhag Neviim and the Torah Shev Al Peh ideas is upheld. So is the importance of what we learn from Chazal. So the Shem Yishmuel says that there are really two chasimas, two seals. Well, the chasima tova, which we ask for on Yom Kippur, and the chasima tova, which we ask for on Hoshana Rabbah. And of course, after Sukkos, when we have demonstrated our teshuva me'avo, because we've gone with dedication into the Abba Minim, we've gone with dedication into the mitzvah of Sukkah, that we've got a much cleaner slate at the end of Sukkos, we go into Hoshana Rabbah to do kapora for these things. And when we speak about Lashon Hara, there is an idea also brought down in the Rabbeinu B'chai and the Karakemach, that the Abba Minim symbolize the different goluyos, the different exiles which we've suffered. There's the Golos of Bavel, and the Esrog is compared to the Golos of Bavel, which was a time of Avodah Zarah. The Lulav is compared to Modai, Gilu Arroyos, the Hadas of Yovon, Shvichas Domim, and the Arova to the Golos Edom, and that's the Golos we're in at the moment, the Golos Edom, and that, says Rabbeinu B'chai, is Lashon Hara. So the Arava which we take on Hoshana Rabbah specifically, apart from the Abba Minim, is to remind us about Lashon Hara, why we're in Golos now, because of Sinas Chinom between one person and another, and not so much, say, idolatry, which was previous Goluyos, and we're atoning for that in order to smash the Golos, and hence the smashing of the Arava to try and make Mashiach come. The Al-Sheikh HaKadosh says that there's another idea of smashing the Arova. You don't have to knock all the leaves off, but we do beat it. And he says it's like this. Sukkos, we have 7 days. We have 7 days culminating in Hoshana Rabbah. And the Yemeshin Oseinu Bohem Shivim Shona. The person's average lifespan is 70 years. Say until 120 to our senior citizens, don't get worried. And so there are 7 days of Sukkos. The first day is compared to the life of the child, which is innocent and hasn't done any averus. And then you've got the chalamoed of Sukkos, which are the intermediate days, which are the years of the person, where there is no mikra kodesh, because that's when there may be averus. And then you come to the eighth day, which is Shmini Atzeres. Eight, says the Maharal, is the Maila Min HaTeva. Eight is Yom Tov again, because eight is when one is in the Olam HaEmes. But also, he says, on the seventh millennium, the Rishoyim will be destroyed, because Mashiach will be coming by the year 6000, B'mehar V'Yomeinu. And when it comes to the seventh period, the seventh millennium, then the Rishoyim, who have been prevalent for the six millennia, will no longer exist, and they'll be destroyed to be Mos HaMashiach. And that is why we're destroying the Arova on the day of Hoshana Rabbah, because it's typical of the seventh millennium, because the Arava also symbolizes the Rosha as well. So what we've tried to do today is envelop the various criteria of Arava. We've said at the beginning how the Arava is part of the kapora of different parts of the body, and we spoke about the other parts of the body which do a kapora. But the Sefer Achinuch says in Shin Kaf Dalet that the speech is always the finale of when a person does something. When you are doing something good or when you're doing something bad, it comes into speech. And there's an interesting Maharal in Gevuras Hashem who says that speech is the combination or the link between the neshama and the guf, between the spiritual and the physical. There's something about speech, and he writes about this Barichus in quite a long way, that speech is the one thing which links together our spiritual and our physical. And that is why we're putting so much emphasis on the Arava in the finale, the grand finale of Sukkos, that our lips are the most important thing as our gates of our body, in the way we serve Hashem properly, with Talmud Torah, with good things. One is suffering from Lashon Hara, one is addicted to Lashon Hara. What is the remedy for that? Says the Rabbeinu Bechaye, straight after Hoshana Rabbah, we've got Simchas Torah. If you are addicted to the idea of evil gossip, then you get more involved in learning Torah and in the Simcha of Torah, and that will eradicate it completely. Hence Simchas Torah coming straight after Hoshana Rabbah, and we should all have a Gemach Simchat Torah and a Chag Sameach. Thank you.